The afternoon before Donald Trump was sworn in as president, Cassandra Fairbanks was at home in a brick duplex 20 minutes north of Washington, D.C., getting dressed for the deplorable. She answered the door barefoot, wearing a Stars and Stripes manicure, a necklace made from a rifle casing, and a strapless red ball gown with a plunging neckline. "Sorry about the mess," she said. "Everyone always crashes with me when they come to town." A woman in her 20s and two men, both 30, sat on a pleather couch surrounded by a moat of camera equipment, staring silently at their phones. Fairbanks connected a laptop to her TV and searched YouTube for Bob Dylan. "One of my idols," she said. "One of the last true rebels." She played a clip at random, a radio recording from 1962 of Dylan performing a folk ballad called The Death of Emmett Till. Everyone looked up at the TV for a while, even though the image was only a still photograph. Dylan sang, "'Cause he was born a black-skinned boy, he was born to die." "I'm so paranoid about my dress falling down," Fairbanks said, hoisting up one side of her décolletage, then the other. A minute later, she added, "I need to finish my makeup," and dashed upstairs. She was already wearing a good amount of makeup, but not enough to be camera ready. The deplorable would be both a party and a media spectacle. There would be crews from various news outlets and admirers posting group selfies to Instagram and several social media demi-celebrities, Fairbanks among them, who might at any moment start broadcasting to their followers on YouTube or Periscope or Facebook Live. She was dressing not for the people in the room, but for the fans at home. Fairbanks's puppy, a Yorkie-Chihuahua mix, ran in tight, frantic circles, its paws clacking on the wooden floor. The living room was crowded with knickknacks, hanging lanterns, mirrors in brightly colored frames. A coffee table was strewn with canned Starbucks mochas and packs of American spirits. The woman on the couch introduced herself as Emily Molly. The two men glanced up briefly, nodded in my general direction, then returned their attention to their phones. I asked their names to be polite, although I recognized them from YouTube. Luke Radowski, lanky and toe-headed, and Tim Pool, whose hair I had never seen because he always wore a beanie. Radowski and Pool were both one-man media brands, specializing in straight-to-camera punditry and jittery live footage from street demonstrations. Molly did some camera work for Pool, but he edited, produced, and starred in the videos on his YouTube channel, which he called Timcasts. "I'm here to write about Cassandra," I said. "I'm a journalist." "Oh, cool. I'm a journalist too," Radowski said. "Yeah, me too," Pool said. Molly, now eyeing me more warily, exercised her right to remain silent. Bob Dylan sang, "This kind of thing still lives today in that ghost-robed Ku Klux Klan." Fairbanks came downstairs a few minutes later, carrying a sequined clutch, a Free Assange tote bag, and a transparent poncho, in case the protesters decide to throw paint on me, she said. Anti-fascist activists, Antifa they called themselves, had threatened to shut down the event by any means necessary, including violence, and they had circulated a list of high-value targets with Fairbanks's name on it. At other far-right events, she said, leftist agitators had thrown jars of urine and socks loaded with batteries. "Normally, I don't mind run-ins with protesters," she said, "but tonight I am not in the fucking mood." Unlike the Liberty Ball and the Freedom Ball, official black tie galas for Republican insiders and campaign bundlers, the deplorable was an independent pre-inauguration bash put on by and for the internet trolls and ultra-nationalists who had, as they like to put it, memed Donald Trump into the White House. One of the trolls, using the acronym for Trump's campaign slogan, "Make America Great Again," told me, "It's going to be all the big names from MAGA Twitter, all the people who joined forces online, all together in a room for the first time." The event would take place at the National Press Club in downtown DC for both symbolic and practical reasons. The Press Club, which held freedom of speech to be sacrosanct, was one of the few venues in town that would accept the organizers' money.